Iran says its indirect talks with the United States will resume this week in a Persian Gulf country as part of efforts to revive the 2015 deal. The U.S. says it's in the process of finalizing more weapon supplies to Ukraine that will include long-range missile defense system and ammunition. Also ahead, the African Union calls for an investigation into the death of 23 African migrants trying to cross from Morocco into the Spanish enclave of Melilla. World News. We're live from the Iranian capital, Tehran. Thank you very much for joining us. Our top story, Iran confirms indirect talks with the United States, which will be hosted by a Persian Gulf country as part of efforts to revive the 2015 deal. The foreign ministry spokesman says the negotiations will be on the issues left unresolved during the last Vienna session.
The upcoming talks will only focus on the remaining issues about the removal of anti-Iran sanctions. Nothing will be added to or deducted from the agreements already reached in Vienna. I emphasize that the upcoming talks are in line with the format of the Vienna talks and will be held indirectly on the issues left unresolved during the last session of the JCPOA revival talks. We sincerely hope that the positive results will come out of the discussions. You should know that the ball is in Washington's court. If they come up with a positive response, an agreement will be reached soon.
Khatibzadeh further said that Washington has agreed to fulfill all its obligations under the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action and ensure Iran's economic benefits under the deal. The spokesman added that it was the message conveyed to Tehran by the EU foreign policy chief during his visit during the weekend. The 2015 deal was left in tatters after the U.S. withdrew from the accord in 2018 and reinstated sanctions on Iran. Talks to revive the JCPOA began in April last year between Iran and the remaining signatories to the accord. The U.S. participated indirectly. The talks were stalled over what Iran called the U.S.'s excessive demands. Iran's top military commander warns that Israel's integration into the U.S. military central command and the regime's participation in its military drills is a threat to the region. Major General Mohammad Baghari says Iran will not tolerate such threats and will certainly respond. The chairman of the Chiefs of Staff of the Iranian Armed Forces stressed that the Israeli regime is the mastermind of all interventionist and destabilizing plots in the region. He added that Israel is hatching schemes to create links with regional countries and achieve its meddlesome goals. CENTCOM, which has declared countering Iran as one of its priorities, assumed command responsibility for the U.S. military's relationship with Israel last September. A CENTCOM delegation met Israeli army officials last week discussing ways to strengthen cooperation. Israel and the U.S. also recently conducted a joint war game in northern Israel. Aid agencies in Afghanistan say survivors of last week's earthquake are in urgent need of cash to rebuild their lives. The 6.1 magnitude quake hit the eastern parts of the country, killing more than 1,000 people. Survivors are facing food and clean water shortages as well. Our Kabul correspondent has the details.
New problems are emerging as expected by the experts. Lack of clean water and food brought about the risk of disease and cholera is spreading. Many are suffering from diarrhea. Women and girls are at higher risks due to lack of access to health and hygiene supplies. People, especially people in those areas, say they expected more countries to contribute humanitarian aids. Sarwajuddin Haqqani, Minister of Interior Affairs of Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan, mentioned that many countries cannot send aids to Afghanistan because of U.S. sanctions. Abdul Kahar Balkhi, a spokesman of Ministry of Foreign Affairs of the IEA, also said liberation of the assets of Central Bank of Afghanistan is vital for the people. The matter of assets of Afghanistan is also mentioned by Hua Chunying, spokesman of Ministry of Foreign Affairs of China. Mr. Chunying requested the liberation of the assets of Afghanistan and mentioned that 1,800 homes are destroyed due to this earthquake.
Russian troops are advancing into the last major city still in the hands of Ukrainian forces in eastern Lugansk province. Media reports say Russian forces are pushing into Lysychansk from five directions. Ukraine says Russia is bombing the city in an attempt to cut off the area from the south. The capture of Lysychansk would give Russia full control of the Lugansk region. The advances come days after the Russian army took over the neighboring city of Severodonetsk. The key industrial hub was the scene of a strict battle for weeks before the Ukrainian army finally withdrew its forces. Ukraine's capital, Kiev, was also hit by Russian missiles for the first time in 3 weeks. According to Ukrainian authorities, the attack killed one person and wounded six others. Staying with Ukraine, the U.S. says it's going to send its sophisticated anti-aircraft missiles to defend against Russian attacks. U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan says his country is in the process of finalizing a weapons package for Ukraine. He says the package includes advanced medium and long-range air defense systems, as well as items that are of urgent need. Last week, the U.S. said it's sending a new batch of military assistance to Ukraine, worth $450 million. That pushes the U.S. aid to Ukraine to over $6 billion. Russia has already warned of serious consequences over the West's military support for the Ukraine. The group of the world's seven advanced economies known as G7 pledges further support for Ukraine in its war with Russia while intensifying sanctions on Moscow. The G7 leaders and the European Union said in a statement from their summit in Germany that they will stand by Kiev for as long as it takes. The G7 nations, namely the US, Germany, Italy, Britain, France, Japan, and Canada, also expressed their commitment to reduce Russia's revenues, including from gold. Earlier on Monday, the US said it would impose sanctions on hundreds more Russian individuals and entities. Washington is also planning to impose tariffs on hundreds of Russian products. The US and its allies have slapped several rounds of sanctions on Russia over the war in Ukraine. An outcry is growing over the death of around two dozen African migrants trying to cross from Morocco into Spain. The African Union is the latest to join the chorus of condemnations. AU Commission Chief Mohamed also called for an immediate investigation into the matter. He said using excessive force against migrants is a violation of international law. About 2,000 migrants tried to break through a border fence between Morocco and the Spanish enclave of Melilla on Friday. Morocco says at least 23 migrants died and 140 police officers were wounded in the violence. The Spanish PM blamed what he described as mafia people traffickers for the fatal incident. Pedro Sanchez described it as an attack on Spain's territorial integrity. Hundreds of protesters rallied in Madrid on Sunday to condemn the deaths. The demonstrators slammed police violence and demanded safe routes for migrants. In other news, North Korea has lashed out at the U.S. for its recent joint military drills with South Korea and Japan. We discussed the issue in our news review program. Let's take a listen to that.
North Korea accuses the United States of creating a NATO-like military alliance in Asia, citing the recent joint military drills held by the U.S., South Korea, and Japan. North Korean foreign minister said Washington is doing its utmost to establish an Asia-style NATO. The ministry said that holding the war games is aimed at preparation for overthrowing the North Korean government. It said such moves make Pyongyang further develop its defense power to be able to confront the U.S. hostile acts. Since the beginning of this year, North Korea has carried out a blitz of missile tests, and those include firing an intercontinental ballistic missiles at full range, for the first time since 2017. Time now to get some more information insight on this. So joining me will be a couple of guests, our own correspondent Jennifer Chang in Seoul. Also in Seoul we have Manuel Pastrash, who's the president of Asia Institute. So let's go to Jennifer first. Jennifer, tell us more about this, how the media, what the media is talking about, what the situation is like.
Well, many analysts say that this move could threaten global peace. The South Korean president left for a NATO summit in Madrid today. And just the day before that, North Korean Foreign Ministry posted on its website that the U.S. is trying to develop a NATO-like alliance in Asia. It has invited not only South Korea and Japan, but also New Zealand and Australia, who are not regular NATO members, to attend this summit. And there's a trilateral summit scheduled to take place Wednesday there between the U.S., Japan, and South Korea. Of course, there will be the focus of the Ukraine war and attempts to counter Russia. But the South Korean president, Yoon Suk-yeol, is a hardliner against North Korea, and he is expected to try to drum up international support to curtail North Korea's nuclear program. And North Korea says that it needs that program to defend itself against these types of hostile NATO-like alliances that the U.S. is trying to build up in Asia. It has not only fired off many missiles this year, an unprecedented number of missiles, and has fired an ICBM at full range for the first time since 2017, but it is also expected to carry out its seventh nuclear test for the first time in 5 years. Mm-hmm. But it says it needs to do that because these NATO-like alliances that the U.S. is trying to build up in Asia are aimed at toppling North Korea and its regime.
Okay, now let me ask Emmanuel almost the same question. Emmanuel, you see what's been going on, tit-for-tat measures. North Korea says do not conduct those drills with South Korea, with Japan. The U.S. keeps doing that. Then they don't want North Korea to do the missile test. It just keeps doing that. Now we have this talk of Asia-style NATO that's in the making.
Right. Well, I think we need to first go back and look at NATO itself. What would that mean, a Asian NATO? So NATO, although it had some justifications, was deeply ambiguous, really from the beginning in the 1950s. But over the last couple of years, essentially NATO has become this unaccountable entity which works together in multinational corporations, arms contractors, and of course various political players. I wouldn't even say it's really America or Germany anymore. It has taken on a life of its own, and it's driving for war. Many of the diplomats are no longer involved in the discussion, no longer possible to have a diplomatic discussion in the Ukraine. So yes, absolutely, we're seeing a trend in this direction towards unaccountable increase in military spending and an unaccountable military structure, which doesn't follow, it's not accountable to the president, although he may be on TV, and it's increasingly driven by profits from arms sales. And I think North Korea, obviously, is entitled to feel threatened, but I think we should all feel threatened, including people in Japan, the United States, and in South Korea.
Okay, Jennifer Chang, Emmanuel Pastrash, both in Seoul. Thank you so much for the contribution.
Elsewhere, pessimism is increasing among Americans about the current state of the economy as inflation rates surpass economists' expectations. Hashtag trending is next with a review of social media comments.
Hey everyone, Ali Reza here, back with another hashtag trending. Americans' view of their own economy is worsening, with a majority of them being concerned about being able to afford day-to-day expenses. Stay tuned for a closer review of the story through the lens of social media. The increased pessimism among Americans comes after inflation rates in May surpassed economists' expectations, with the annual inflation rate hitting a 40-year record high. Rising oil, food, and shelter costs were the major contributing factors to the inflation spike. Opinion polls show recent price hikes have left many Americans feeling unsure about their ability to retire, take vacation, or just afford day-to-day items. People blame the Biden administration for the majority of the economic pain that they are feeling. ZRK Ratem has our first tweet of the day. He said, "While we are heading towards a recession after a huge inflation and famine, which will end up with a nice World War III, they are blinding us with abortion rights, black rights, LGBTQ rights, dog rights, while they are planning and passing plans in darkness for a new world order." Free speech is a minority right, has our next tweet. "Raging inflation in a recession, skyrocketing petrol prices, proxy war with Russia. China manufactures 99% of U.S. drugs and many things critical to our strategic industries. Can this get any worse?" Changing it up, said IMF chief Kristalina Georgieva, who earns a $500,000 tax-free salary, says U.S. recession would be a necessary price to defeat inflation as the lender slashed its growth forecast from 2.9% to 3.7%. Defund liberals said America has the highest inflation out of all the first world countries. Biden's reckless policies, his attacks on oil/gas, attacks on average people have put us into stagflation officially, into major recession when GDP is updated. Meanwhile, many Americans are in a state of panic over the possibility of a looming recession caused by the Federal Reserve's policy of increased interest rates in a desperate move to contain the unprecedented inflation. Our next batch of tweets starts with a comment by Deepak Singh. "Traders are concerned that persistent inflation will force the U.S. Fed to keep raising interest rates to the point that it causes a recession within the next year. This could cause corporate earnings to decline." JJ tweeted, "U.S. and EU will be facing inflation, stagflation, and recession soon. The NATO unity is pure symbolic. Sanctions imposed by the West are questionable. Russian oil exports increased 1,076% in May, thanks to EU's help and contribution." Rich Rendell tweeted, "Highest inflation in 40 years. Recession barreling down on us because consumer confidence is destroyed and a bunch of low-paying jobs that nobody wants or can survive off of." And over here we have a tweet by Harshvardhan V. "If U.S. goes into recession, they would print more dollars to hand out minimum living expenses to lower income groups. This will bring them to the original problem of too much money supply and inflation. Tricky situation." That's it for another edition of Hashtag Trending. Take care and bye-bye.
And that brings an end to our bulletin for this hour, but don't go away.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsetodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsetodayEnglish.
From the very heart of evergreen forests, Under the starry sky of the desert, with the radiance of silver-colored sand, in the midst of proud mountains. Close up, Iran.
Hello, I am Mitra, an Iranian nature traveler. To know more about the wonders and beauties of magnificent Iran, keep me company. I am now at the airport and I'm late as always. I hope that the gate is still open and I arrive on time. Oh, thank you, God. The flight's gate is still open. Oh, my today's destination is Sistan and Baluchistan province. I'm going to visit one of the extraordinary archaeological sites of Iran, Shahr Sukhte, literally the burnt city. Shahr Sukhte is the remains of an ancient city in Iran. This city was built on the alluvium of the estuary of the Hirmand River to Lake Hamun. Shahr Sukhte is located 120 kilometers south of the city of Zabul. This large city was built in Bronze Era, and Iranians used to live in this city almost 6,000 years ago. The total area of the city is 280 hectares and is divided into residential, central, and industrial areas, as well as monuments and cemetery. These areas are situated in the form of successive hills. The ancient area of Shahr Sukhte is about 18 meters higher than the land surrounding it. Shahr Sukhte used to be an advanced city at its time. The remains of Shahr Sukhte shows that this city had a well-managed system for water supply and sewage. This unique heritage was registered by the UNESCO World Heritage List in 2014. I am now near Shahr Sukhte site. Here we have the scenery of desert, and there is no tree here except tamarisk trees. Though 5,000 years BC, this region had a diverse flora. This region used to have abundant weeping willow, maple, and white poplar trees. In order to see the remains of Shahr Sukhte, I have to go up this hill. I am now in the area of the cemetery. There are triangular forms here. I think they're made of adobe. Archaeologists have found traces of clod in these graves. These fabrics were used either for wrapping the dead or in the form of underlays and covers for the dead. In these graves, many pottery objects have been discovered. One of these well-known pottery artifacts is a pottery vessel
with a drawing of a goat and a tree. Giving the vessel a spin, one would see a goat leaping to snatch leaves from a tree. This can be recognized as the first animation movie in the world. I am now standing beside the grave number 6705. In this grave, the skeleton of a robust woman with her left eye being artificial was found. On this artificial eyeball, the eye's capillaries are made with thin gold wires. This artificial eye is one of the great wonders of the world. Yourself why this city is called the Burnt City. Researchers say Shahr-e Sukhte used to be an industry which had a lot of furnaces. Therefore, ash was found due to the activity of industrial furnaces around the city. And when archaeologists first spotted ash in this city, they came to the idea to call this city Shahr-e Sukhte, literally the burnt city. Actually, the real name of this city is not known yet. The wonders of Shahr-e Sukhte are a lot, and researchers are still studying this ancient city. One of the most significant conclusions derived from these findings is that the inhabitants of Shahr-e Sukhte had been really civilized and peace-seeking people. Well, our beautiful Iran is, of course, full of wonders and beauties.
Until next time, goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuha alladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis-sabri was-salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now we invite you to listen to a speech by Sheikh Hamza Sodagin.
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in the Holy Quran tells us, نَبْلُوكُمْ بِالشَّرِّ وَالْخَيْرِ فِتْنَةً. We will test you with khayr and with shar. Bala is something that we need to remind ourselves of. What is the purpose of it in this universe? When it happens to each of us individually, when it happens to a community. Verses nablukum bishar wal khayr fitna, saying that bala is in the case of khair, in the case of khair as well. When there's khair with us, the good things that we enjoy, we admire, we like to have, those things, that is a bala. Or those things are bala, nablukum. The other thing that is bala is shar, things that are unfavorable to us, undesirable, unpleasant. Those are bala as well. God says, nablukum bisharri wal khayri fitna. Let me point out that this is not the only verse of the Holy Quran related to shar and khair. And for a person, where shar or why shar comes their way and why shar doesn't come their way. This is not the only verse related to that. There are other verses. If one is trying to understand all the possible reasons why shar or khair can come one's way, then they would have to do an extensive research and figure out what the possibilities are. However, what I consistently focus on and remind us is there is always an element of bala in what happens in this world. For example, if there is good that comes our way because of a good deed, it may or not may not be because of that. This is important. We can't be certain that this is as a reward for something that was done. We can't be certain of that. Or if there's shar, if there's something unpleasant, undesirable, perhaps maybe there's something wrong that I have done that this is as a result of that, and in a sense a form of punishment for that. Maybe, but also maybe not. We can't be certain of that. What we can be certain of is that in the context of that khair or shar, there is always an element of bala in this world. Because everything, as the verse in Surah Mulk says, الَّذِي خَلَقَ الْمَوْتَ وَالْحَيَاةِ لِيَبْلُوَكُمْ أَيُّكُمْ أَحْسَنُ عَمَلًا. This life and death that we have here in the material realm is for bala. The whole purpose of it is for bala. It is for testing. There's always the element of testing in whatever happens. For example, going back to that, let's assume in a case, the reason why we have received a khair is because of a good deed. Let's assume in some case there is such. We won't know. We can't identify. Is this particular thing, because God doesn't speak to us and say this specifically is because of that deed. We don't know. Unless someone that has access to that tells us, like the Ma'sumin, or someone that's guided by the Ma'sumin. Otherwise, we wouldn't know. But let's say in a case, let's assume there is, it's because something good that was done. Okay, fine. But that good thing that has come our way is now itself a test. It's a test. What do you do with this good thing that has been given to you? It's not like that reward that was given in this realm, in this world, is going to be given to you, and your decisions in regards to that are not going to have any positive or negative consequences. That's not the case. In this world, it doesn't work like that. The hereafter is a different realm. In this world, it doesn't work like that. If you did something good and something good was given to you, now in this bala, in this test that has come your way, you fail. One of the elements that causes a person to fail in the context of bala is to lose sight of the aspect of that being a bala, being a test. And losing sight of the reason why these things come to us from this perspective, from the perspective of it being bala. One last point regarding that, meaning why the different things come. Some look at some of the verses of the Quran without proper understanding, and then they, find maybe translations or whatever. I don't know. Sometimes it's not even a translation. The person may know the language, but enough attention is not given to the words and how God uses these words. to think that for a believer, that God is, in a sense, waiting for them to mess up, waiting for them to do something wrong, and God quickly punish them, and so on and so forth. This understanding is very wrong. Or to even assume that God, when he, we say, punishes a person, if they're a believer, that they're doing that, that God is doing that to hurt that person, is a very ill thought of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. It's very wrong to think of Allah in that way. For a believer, even the punishment for something wrong that he has done is for his good. That's rahmah for the believer. Why did I mention this very briefly? I want to say, look, instead of when, especially when hardship comes, when difficulty comes, because that's really the focus right now. Tonight, this is what our focus is. When hardship comes, difficulty comes, one of the things that we are tested on is not what we do with our tongue or with our limbs even. It has to do with our thoughts and our feelings. How do we think of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? Do we view Him as Rabbul Alameen, Ar-Rahman Ar-Rahim? Do we view Him as the Merciful, Ar-Rahman Ala Al-Arsh Istawa? Do we see Him in that way, which will elevate us, which will help us ascend, which will be an advancement in that in the context of that baliya, that test of something unpleasant, the shar that came our way. Even if it's as a result of something that I've done, even if I know it's for that, because as we said, we don't really know. We can't identify the reason behind this. The hadith says, and the Quran tells us the stories of all these prophets, the hardship they went through, and these are the best of the people, in this world was something that non-pious people don't go through. This is very, very difficult, the hardships that these prophets went through. And the hadith says that that's the case. But if I know for a fact, somehow I came to know 100% this is as a result of the wrong deed I did, how should I feel about that? I should still see the mercy of God in that that is not something that is meant to hurt me. Rather, it's something that is intended to help me.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karim Adi Alim Halim Hakim Mati. شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio.
log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
The Assange persecution is the greatest threat to Western press freedoms in years. It is also a shining monument to the fraud of American and British self-depictions, says Glenn Greenwald, author, in an article published under the heading, "The UK's decision to extradite Assange shows why the US-UK's freedom lectures are a farce." Stay tuned, please, for the second part of this article. The recent UK Home Secretary's decision, characteristically subservient and obedient of the British when it comes to the demands of the US, does not mean that Assange's presence on US soil is imminent. Under British law, Assange has the right to pursue a series of appeals contesting the Home Secretary's decision and will likely do so. Given that the British judiciary has more or less announced in advance their determination to follow the orders of their American masters, it is difficult to see how these further proceedings will have any effect other than to delay the inevitable. But putting oneself in Assange's position, it is easy to see why he is so eager to avoid extradition to the US for as long as possible. The Espionage Act of 1917 is a nasty and repressive piece of legislation. It was designed by Woodrow Wilson and his band of authoritarian progressives to criminalize dissent against Wilson's decision to involve the US in the First World War. It was used primarily to imprison anti-war leftists such as Eugene Debs, as well as anti-war religious leaders such as Joseph Franklin Rutherford, for the crime of publishing a book condemning Wilson's foreign policy. One of the most insidious, despotic innovations of the Obama administration was to repurpose and revitalize the Wilson-era Espionage Act as an all-purpose weapon to punish whistleblowers who denounced Obama's policies. The Obama Justice Department under Attorney General Eric Holder prosecuted more whistleblowers under the Espionage Act of 1917 than all previous administrations combined. In fact, three times as many as all prior presidents combined. One whistleblower charged by Obama officials under that law is NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden, who in 2013 revealed mass domestic spying of precisely the kind that Obama's Director of National Intelligence, James Clapper, now of CNN, falsely denied conducting when testifying to the Senate. which led to legislative curbs enacted by the U.S. Congress and which courts have ruled unconstitutional and illegal. What makes this law so insidious is that, by design, it is almost impossible for the government to lose. As detailed in a Washington Post op-ed when the indictment was first revealed, arguing why it poses the greatest threat to press freedoms in the West in years, this 1917 law is written as a strict liability statute, meaning that the defendant is not only guilty as soon as there is proof that they disclosed classified information without authorization, but they are also barred from raising a justification defense, meaning they cannot argue to the jury of their peers that it was not only permissible but morally necessary to disclose that information because of the serious wrongdoing and criminality it revealed on the part of the nation's most powerful political officials. That 1917 law, in other words, is written to offer only show trials but not fair trials. No person in their right mind would willingly submit to prosecution and life imprisonment in the harshest American penitentiaries under an indictment brought under this fundamentally corrupted law. Whatever else one might think of Assange, there is simply no question that he is one of the most consequential, pioneering, and accomplished journalists of his time. One could easily make the case that he occupies the top spot by himself. And that, of course, is precisely why he is in prison, because just like free speech, free press guarantees in the US and UK exist only on a piece of parchment and in theory. Citizens are free to do journalism as long as it does not disturb or anger or impede real power centers. Employees of the Washington Post and CNN are free to say what they want as long as what they are saying is approved and directed by the CIA, or the content of their reporting advances the interest of the Pentagon's sprawling war machine. Real journalists often face threats of prosecution, imprisonment, or even murder, and sometimes even mean tweets. Much of the American corporate media class has ignored Assange's persecution or even cheered it precisely because he shames them, serving as a vivid mirror to show them what real journalism is and how they are completely bereft of it. And the American and British governments have successfully exploited the petty jealousies and insecurities of their failed, vapid, and pointless media servants to get away with imposing the single greatest threat to press freedom in the West without much protest at all. Free speech and press freedoms do not exist in reality in the US or in the UK. They are merely rhetorical instruments to propagandize their domestic population and justify and ennoble the various wars and other forms of subversion they constantly wage in other countries in the name of upholding values they themselves do not support. The Julian Assange persecution is a great personal tragedy, a political travesty, and a grave danger to basic civic freedoms. But it is also a bright and enduring monument to the fraud and deceit that lies at the heart of these two governments' depictions of who and what they are.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
A major benefit brought by Imam Khomeini was familiarizing people with the concept of resistance. This is the part of the speech delivered on June 4th, 2022 by Imam Khomeini, the leader of the Islamic Revolution. On the 33rd demise anniversary of Imam Khomeini, greetings be upon him. Imam brought the people to the arena, showed them the way, kept them in the arena and steered them away from despair and hopelessness. No other person in the country was capable of pulling this off. We know political and seminarian personalities, some from close up and some from a distance. No person was capable of carrying that heavy load and bringing it to the destination. That endeavor was exclusive to our magnanimous Imam. It was he who managed to accomplish that feat. At different stages, Imam even pointed the various arenas of fighting. He showed the people where the arena of fighting was. He did so in different periods of time and in line with the developments of the time. During the time of revolutionary activities, he did it in one way and in the heat of bloody days leading to the victory of the revolution. He did it in another way. When the regime was thinking of imposing martial law in its last breaths, of sending the people home and of pulling out the root by the absence of the people, Imam called on the people to pour onto the streets with divine inspiration. It was really divine inspiration, and Imam himself said it later on.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
In those hours, many revolutionary politicians opposed to this. They said that was dangerous for Imam. Imam, however, said, no, and he asked the people to take to the streets. This was an effort to determine the arena of fighting. That is, it became clear that in those hours and on that day, the arena of fighting was for the people to take to the streets. He would determine the arena of fighting like this. In the first months after the revolution, he determined what the arena of fighting was. In the second month, the arena was to carry out a referendum and to choose the political system and to confront anti-revolutionary forces. At some point, the issue of power came up, during which the revolutionary and fighting forces of the revolution were besieged. Imam ordered everyone to go and participate. I'd not forget that hour. And that day, Tehran had taken on a particular atmosphere. It seemed that everyone on the streets wanted to go to Pavé. They were looking for a car or any other means to make it to Pavé on the orders of Imam. So he would show where the arena of fighting was.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.